Hmm? Sorry? Yeah. Okay, how are the volumes? Okay. Sound good? Okay, so welcome. Hope everyone enjoyed your lunch. So my name is Peter Hessler. Okay, how about now? Is that better? Okay. My name is Peter Hessler. I'm with the OpenBSD project, and I'll be giving a talk about using BGP as a real-time import and export mechanism for anti-spam lists. So what is this? It is a network-based spam fighting technique that I created. It takes the bypass and trap lists, more commonly known as the whitelist and blacklist, out of the OpenBSD SpamD system, and uses BGP as a distribution protocol to spread all of these lists to all of the subscribers who want to get a copy of it. We're using BGP4 and as the method, and using BGP communities to apply the tagging of which list it belongs to. So I launched a service for this that I call bgpspamd.net at AsiaBSDCon in 2013. At the time I started, I only had 3 upstream sources, and at the end of the conference, I had a total of 4 users, which was relatively nice for the first launch. As of this morning, I now have 5 upstream sources and 28 users. And no worries. And it is usable right now. It is, if you want to sign up and use it, go to the website. All the configuration and documentation for it exists online. So if you want to run your own service, you can easily do so. If you want to provide me with data for the service, you want to provide either your trap list or your whitelist, please let me know, and we can discuss what's going on. And always, more users are welcome. A common question I get is, how can I use this? You do not have to have a registered AS. You do not have to be a BGP administrator. You can just simply subscribe to it and add it to your system. I include the specifics of what you have to set up on the website, and this will and it works fine through NAT. It works fine over many remote hops and peers. So you don't need to actually be part of the BGP cloud for that. So a SpamD source system are the 5 upstream servers that I mentioned. They only list the specific IP address of that they've seen behavior from. Intentionally, and different from many other anti-spam techniques, is we will not and do not penalize any network neighbors. Just because you live in a dangerous neighborhood doesn't mean you should be shot too. It's a very simplistic method. We only want to catch the low-hanging fruit. We want to get to the obvious spammers. And we also need to be careful about how we deal with this. We don't want to open up and allow everybody to send you mails. And we don't want to block you from receiving any mails from anybody. And the gray listing technique of telling them to try again later is very, very powerful, but it's only powerful when you can still use this. So the trap list is one of the two lists that we're distributing. It's also commonly known as a blacklist, if that makes it easier to picture it in your mind. It's generated from the source server's SpamD trap list, which is essentially each server has a list of IP addresses that are known bad and should never have any activity on them. And so, for example, Peter Hansen has a list of these address or a list of these email addresses on his website. That is a, if you email anybody on this list, you're clearly a spammer and you deserve to be blocked. And when you send an email to a server with that's using this trap list, you the IP address gets added to the list and distributed for 24 hours. And every time they have a new attempt to connect and send, it's the timer resets. So it's they can stay on for quite some time. The bypass list, also commonly known as a whitelist, is so SpamD itself has a fairly low bar to be added to the whitelist. Under the default configuration, if they try again within 4 hours, then they will be added to the whitelist, and they stay on the whitelist for about 36 days. And that's enough time for the monthly mailman password reminders or other very low traffic things to not be delayed. We want to distribute a list that's slightly more difficult to get on, because if we just simply do that, then if one spammer gets through the list or gets through to any of the upstream peers, then he can get access to all of them. So currently what it's set for is that it has to be in the whitelist for 75 days and they have to have sent more than 10 emails during that time. And then we think it's a real server. So why is this a useful thing to do? Larger organizations have more emails. This way you can use their the information that they've generated to help protect your network, either from people who are knowingly spamming them. If they're spamming large organizations, they're likely also to try and spam you at some point. Same thing with the semi-trusted servers. If they're reasonably good enough to get through their lists, then they're probably also reasonably good for you as well. The other thing is that the shared bypass list helps the commonly known as the Gmail sender problem. So larger organizations that send a lot of emails, for example, Gmail, they will do a retry from different IPs within their net block.
Most don't.
Gmail is the main one that does, correct. That's why it's the Gmail problem, not the Yahoo problem. And this way, a large organization would get enough email traffic from Gmail or whoever else is behaving like this, and this way you can gain the benefit of that list without having to go through and whitelist all of Gmail or whitelist all of whoever else is doing this sort of thing. So now we get into a bit of what we've learned over the last year of running the service. Basically, I have about just a bit over 163 million events in my log file, and that includes each addition, each subtraction, when my upstream servers connect and disconnect, things like this. So unfortunately, it's only IPv4 entries for now. OpenBSD, BGP, SpamD does not support IPv6 yet. That is something for future work that I'll talk about later. Interestingly, none of the IP addresses on my list can be aggregated and into better than a /32 net block, which I thought was very surprising. Nobody on the whitelist can be aggregated. Nobody on the blacklist could be aggregated. There was just enough spaces on the boundaries where you could not do that. Out of this, there was about 17,000 of the /24s, which is the, for those of you who don't know CIDR addressing, is the first three octets of an IP address, also formerly known as a class C. Formerly known. Please note that is ancient terminology that I think was deprecated before some of you were even born. No.
It's a
classy. Yeah.
Call it what it is.
Yeah. So 17,000 slash 24s have at least one IP address listed. And in the bypass list, and then 22,000 are represented in the trap list. There is about almost 1.2 million unique IP addresses listed in this. 31 entries have been added to the blacklist more than 10,000 times. About 10,000 entries were added more than 1,000 times, and 800,000 were announced only once. They got added to the list, they fell off, never added again an entire year. This is... Sorry?
From that, could I infer that 80% of the machines infected with the virus are cleared and never come back, and the remaining 20% constantly get reinfected?
Or they've been rooted and don't get used again.
Yeah.
It would be the same effect.
Yeah.
Yes. I would, but instead of saying machines, I would say IP addresses. Because it's entirely possible that the machine itself has been moved around to other IPs.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah.
Another question about that would be if you are using this service,
mm-hmm.
then you're not going to send announcements for things that you're already blocking, right? So
correct.
So the 31 entries with 10,000 announcements, how are you getting 10,000 announcements if people are blocking the further traffic that would cause announcements?
Because this is coming in from the upstream, where it updates its metadata.
So that upstream may not actually be blocking based on inclusion of the list.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The setting us data and utilizing the data from it are two separate events. And so some of my upstreams use all of the data I'm providing. Some of them do not.
So I guess, I mean, would it be problematic if everybody were using this to block their spam? Because then nobody would know what to include in the list.
OK, so not really. The way I've designed the network is that the users are not able to inject any data into this. I reject all attempts of announcing an IP address from just the users. And I have a list of just five people that are providing data that I know personally. And we have a basically a verbal contract about how we add the lists and how we handle this, just to make sure we don't, like, we're not adding sites that we have a vendetta against, as an example. And we're very careful to be only, you have to exhibit this behavior to be added to either the whitelist or the blacklists.
Right. It's just if one or two of those five started actually blocking their inbound mail based on the list, then these stats would become meaningless.
It depends on how they do this. If they're also using SpamD to do this, then it would update their counters when the actual traffic comes in, not when the block gets added.
Okay.
So it, yeah, when you if you both send and receive the data, you still only update yourself based on what traffic you have actually seen.
And blocking isn't usually blocking. It's still goes comes into SpamD.
Yeah.
It just doesn't get delivered.
The blocking is not, we don't block it at the TCP layer. They still get connected. That's actually a good point. That is a very critical aspect of this, is that it is dangerous to just simply do a TCP block and just drop the connection. The famous example is that you are running an email server for your company. Your CEO is in discussions with another company about like a corporate merger or something huge and very important. And their salespeople have decided to just, or their marketing people or whoever, bought a list of email addresses that includes one or two of your trap lists. They send an email there, and then the other company CEO sends your CEO some important document that happens to be the first intentional communication. Now you're on the blacklist. And then if you were just dropping it at the network layer, then the other side wouldn't know why. The CEO asked his tech guy, well, where's his email? I don't know. their email server is down. It's not responding. We can't connect to it. And then that could possibly put your job in danger. Now, if you're using SpamD and you tell it, oh, hey, you're a spammer, then the other side can make their own correct decisions about what they're doing and about how to either get off this list or find out what's going on. So does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. So we've also received a lot of interesting IP addresses listed. So the way the addresses get in is that this is the network traffic after the three-way handshake, after an attempted SMTP transaction. So these systems have routes to it. And as you can see, all of these networks that I'm listing are not supposed to be routable on the public internet. So for example, I have three entries from the 0/8 network, which is always defined as this network. I have some reserved entry. I have 17 in the reserved parts. I have even 255, 255, 255, 255 listed in this one. There's been a total of about 98,000 additions to the list from networks in the, or from IP addresses in these ranges. I find it amusing. it's not necessarily faith in the BGP filters that other people are running. It's that these should not exist on the network, and so, okay, let's just count them. I didn't check, but I can check later. We can check offline. Yeah, like I will talk to my upstreams about this data. I found it yesterday evening. So I will talk to my upstreams about who these are and if they're infected by it or whatever.
Is this entries that other people have established that they are getting spam from this IP address?
Correct. Exactly.
Somebody gets spam from a multicast IP address.
Somebody decided to route it.
Somebody decided to announce it, and it showed up on their router magically. Yeah, so like the RFC 1918s, I'm not so worried about those. But like the link local and the multicast and reserved addresses, those are interesting. So the number of entries, those are how many unique IP addresses per each of them.
This is convention. There's no technology barrier making that happen. It's just convention.
There is. Actually.
Well,
yeah. If networks implement BCP 38, this is all gone.
You're part of policy now, right?
If
I can dig an open BSD box.
Oh, sure. You can announce whatever the hell you feel like. That's fine. Yeah.
Drop these addresses as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you look at something that doesn't necessarily have to come from outside my network.
Oh, they can
come from inside. Network.
It could be somebody relaying it and catching it spammy as well.
But if you
import
CP38
because the
as well. And
on the
edges,
yes.
But yeah.
Might come from the inside.
On the edges towards your customers as well.
I would strongly suspect, based on the people I know who are running this, those RFC 1918 addresses came from internally. Your two entries from localhost, for all I know, one of them might have been me. Just tell that blah 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 is trapping working. Yeah, I trap myself. Yeah.
So I can say that 127.0.0.1 is one of the addresses. I don't remember the other one.
Yeah, and I mean like RFC 1918 stuff internally that might be routed internally hitting the machine shouldn't happen, but I can see it happening.
Yeah.
But some of the rest of it, it's like
the all zeros is weird.
Don't believe that anybody is doing the
and so, you would comment during this other discussion that what if it was somebody relaying? It's we only look at the TCP, basically the IP header of the connecting system.
Right.
Yeah.
It could still be, you'd have a proxy or something. That's what you'd see.
It would have to be like a layer 4 redirect or something like this in order for that to work. If it was a layer 7 proxy, then that would not work. Okay, quite possibly, yeah. So yeah, I thought that was interesting setup. So these are the top 10 entries in my blacklists. We see here that we have a nice individual from Bulgaria with almost 14,000 entries in the list. He has been added and received and dropped all this. When we go through, we just have all sorts of just interesting IP addresses. They're naughty people. I think I'm going to go email their abuse handles and see if they respond or care.
Funny to see in this list of nice companies also Italy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I still get a fair amount of spam from Italy.
This is one host, right?
This is one IP address. And the...
Anybody own any of those networks?
I know some of those.
Telecom Italia about IT.
Yeah.
I was actually... Could be, but you can blame me because I taught BGP to the guys at the Asia Tech in Iran last week and mm-hmm. a few of the others in Iran. So.
Now, to be fair, some of this may be very old data, and they may just at the beginning of the year, and they may not still be in the list. I did not check that, but I thought a top 10 would be fun to look at.
It's not me.
No, you're a medium fucker.
The impressive part is somebody. Well, I guess it may be an SMTP server. The impressive part is somebody in Deutschland managed to keep an IP address for long enough to be able to.
This is not a good server.
Yeah.
It's one of the bigger hosting providers, but it's about who does hosting providers.
So don't necessarily trust the reverse DNS entry. For example, the bginfo.net was somebody completely wrong. It was just a .com, and I was like, okay, well, who is this? Domain does not exist.
Strato.
Okay. Yep.
Well, I was actually running those statistics.
He's running it right now.
Who's the real problem here?
Is that still
so? We have 4,600 single ASs, and I'm running the ones for the most ASs. So,
yeah. Okay.
1 second.
Okay. Yeah. So for the recording, 4,800.
4,600.
Or I'm sorry, 4,600 unique ASs.
ASs.
And hopefully by the end, if I talk slowly enough, then we may have the top 10. Run faster, hamsters. So we've learned a lot of information from this. So the good parts we learned is that many sources are sending information, and this is providing a much bigger list than you would ordinarily get. The block lists are actually fantastic to share amongst the groups, and that getting having this information from many sources, spreading it out to many clients, is making email a lot better for each of the individual users of the system. Additionally, I've even gotten some third-party people who are making this work on non-OpenBSD. My original creation was just focusing on the OpenBSD side of this, and other people are using it. For example, Mark Martinik, he was able to make it work using FreeBSD, RBL, DNSD, and Spam Assassin. And he sent basically a how-to and a short Perl script of how to extract all the information to the Spam Assassin mailing lists. I also had someone talk with me privately about they're using Quagga to extract the information and adding it to their own proprietary infrastructure at their place of work. So thank you very much to those two people. If other people want to make this work with their own systems, that'd be fantastic. Please feel free to ask me details, and I can help you figure out what you need to extract and how to add it to your systems. Also, it is very fast to update all the clients. The traditional problems of downloading a list off of the internet means that you have to run update it periodically, and the source files may not be created instantaneously. And the traditional problem is that if the source is updated once an hour, and you download it at the top of the hour, and then a spam IP address gets added at 1 after the hour, then you have to wait 59 minutes before it shows up in your lists. The other problem is when everyone else is updating their lists at the top of the hour, then the server hosting this data file just freaks out and just kind of melts for a little bit. And that's a huge amount of load on the source server for this. So I did a test during one of the talks earlier, and it took me only 7 seconds to download the full list over BGP using the conference wireless. So that was nice. It takes under 2 seconds to propagate the changes to all the members. When one of my upstream sources decides to add it, it's probably sub half a second, but I just have not spent the time measuring it that closely. We can make this even faster. Right now, one of the main limitations for adding the data is that the servers themselves need to run periodic cron jobs. And there's a few ideas that I have for how to have both SpamD and BGP talk closer to each other. So the bad. First we had the good, now we have the bad.